Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. This is the daily update for COVID-19 preparation in the communities. And today is Tuesday, the 14th of April, 2020. I'm Joe Vicnicki for the local news department. And I'm joined on the virtual online meeting here by a couple of folks from the Medical Center and the Petersburg Borough. And let's start off again with Petersburg Borough and Incident Commander Carl Hagerman. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Joe.
What's the latest?
Well, the sun's trying to peek out. I like to see that. It's hopefully going to be a nice day today. Everybody should get out and go for a walk if you can. But otherwise, we are trying to decipher the latest mandate from the state. Yesterday, late in the day, they issued mandate number 14, which was written a little interesting. It's in regarding to non-congregate sheltering and in an order to do that. But the way it was written was interesting. Just to quote it directly, it says the state of Alaska is prepared to implement a temporary quarantine and isolation program utilizing non-congregate shelter solutions. And then it goes into the rest of the, and it's really confusing to me what exactly that means. So we've been trying to get to the bottom of that, and without a whole lot of luck yet. I guess the good news is that Petersburg was already thinking along those lines and has been working on a plan to provide non-congregate housing or shelter to a couple of the population groups that the state is targeting. Mostly for homeless folks that that have been tested, or and we're waiting for results from those tests. Those people need to quarantine and be away from the general public, of course, so that the potential for spread of the virus is mitigated. And of course, any homeless person who is a confirmed positive, which we haven't had in Petersburg, also needs to be quarantined. So we have been working on a plan to address those two groups of people in Petersburg, and actually are just about ready to bring that plan forward to the assembly when this mandate came out. So I guess it's good that we were being proactive and thinking about those populations, but we don't have a final answer yet.
Okay, and does that plan involve the high school gym or somewhere else?
Well, it's a tough problem to address, because if you think about it, these people don't have a home. Normally, if somebody is tested, they'll just go home and shelter in place and quarantine themselves, isolate themselves, you know, in their own residence. These people don't have a residence, so we can't put them in a gym with multiple people, because we don't, in the case of a tested individual, we don't know if they're positive yet or not. We have to presume that they are, but if there are others that aren't positive, we don't want to spread the virus. So it pretty much has to be a singular room or some kind of isolation facility that keeps everybody separated. And so that's been very hard to come up with. The plan right now is to try and locate used RVs or travel trailers and set up a location where people can quarantine away from others with some support from the borough and the hospital.
Okay. Yesterday, Carl, we had a caller, Marge Oinas, who was trying to get on line with us, and I had trouble getting her on in the phone. She had a question for Aaron Michael about how many paper forms had been turned in to the public health nurse from people coming in from the airport and filling out the state's travel declaration form. I emailed Aaron Michael about that. She said 25 paper forms turned into public health as of Friday last week. But she also said to keep in mind that many said they would be filling out those forms online. Marge asked that question to try to get an idea of whether people were complying with the requirement for filling out that form or not as they got off the jet here in Petersburg. And then also had a question from the Petersburg pilot about does the harbor report offloading passengers like the airport does? Carl, can you tackle that one?
Sure. Yeah, we haven't had an occasion yet that we know of somebody coming in from out of town, from out of state or out of country, where they needed to fill out the travel declaration form, coming into the harbor. I don't believe I can't think of any off the top of my head. So, as far as I know, that hasn't happened. In the harbor, we do have other information posted down there for the folks that come in from other communities, traveling within the state. There is no mandate that they quarantine directly. It's more of a guidance. Most of the people that come in from the harbor are fishermen. Right now, any other travel is essentially prohibited by the state. So it's fishermen that are coming in and out, and they do have to meet the social distancing requirements of Mandate 11 as they're doing their business. But it is a somewhat of a moving target to figure out if somebody needs to strictly quarantine or not. We do have the quarantine matrix form on our website that helps with that. But it is quite confusing for folks, I would just encourage anybody that has any questions to send an email to EOC@petersburgak.gov, or look at the quarantine matrix chart on our website to try and sort out if they need to quarantine.
Okay. Carl, I've also asked a few times about commercial fishing and seafood processing and that side of things, but I understand from the state that guided sport fishing is also considered an essential business during this time. And those companies, if they want to not follow the travel quarantine mandates, can also submit any workforce plans, mitigation plans. Have you heard from any guiding companies operating Petersburg looking at doing that?
I haven't heard from any since the guiding was and sport fishing was deemed essential by the governor's office. I know that I did field a question yesterday about somebody wanting to fly in and fly out to a lodge if that was okay. The sport fishing and the guiding allowance that I've seen pertains to Alaskans. Sport fishing, not people from out of state. So it's from what I understand and through conversations with the borough's attorney, it looks like the interstate travel for sport fishing is it would not fall into this allowance. Those people that come in from out of state still need to quarantine for 14 days, fill out the travel declaration, and make sure that they are isolating themselves. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense for somebody to come and try to do some sport fishing in a lodge or with a guide if they have to quarantine for 14 days. So in-state travel and guiding is allowed, but out of state does not look like it is.
Okay, thanks. Carl, anything else from the borough standpoint before we move on to our other guests?
I think that's about it.
Okay, we'll come back to you if things pop up. Let's go to Petersburg Medical Center, who I think are on the line. Anyone with the Petersburg Medical Center? There's a few people calling in, it looks like. I'm not sure who they are, hopefully. PMC, are you there?
This is Phil.
Hi, Phil.
I had a little bit of trouble on the Zoom, so I just called in on the number that was provided. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we got you. Go ahead, you're on.
Okay. Yeah. So, our world is filled with Zoom calls and teleconferences these days. So, trying to give a meaningful update. Some of the things that we're working on. If you haven't heard, the Dr. Zink, who's the medical director for the state of Alaska, she provided an outstanding presentation yesterday evening for the governor's briefing. It is recorded. I encourage community members to listen to that. It has the most current and up-to-date information on the virus itself, kind of the goals and the standpoints of the state as it broadens its criteria for testing. And it talks about the goals for testing with one of the goals that Dr. Zink had mentioned in her presentation is that because of Alaska having, you know, not having the healthcare infrastructure of some other areas, the goal really is to broaden the capability of testing. And she speaks to that in a lot of detail. And I think rather than replicate some of the things that she's saying, really, it'd be good for folks to go onto that website. It's called coronavirus.state.gov. I think that it has all the recorded live stream presentations. I thought particularly the presentation last night was really, really well done. Some updates for us. We are receiving some Abbott testing capability, which is Abbott is the name of the company. There are some limitations with that. I want to make sure that, you know, once that the community is aware, once we have these testing doesn't mean that they're 100% accurate. There are some limitations with some testing. And if Lori's on the phone, I might want to ask her to touch upon that a little bit, some of the limitations with screening and testing availability. Now, so on the one hand, we're broadening, you know, the ability to test for folks in town in critical infrastructure. Some of the things that maybe that Carl touched upon, can we incorporate testing in those in some of the protocols? But I also want to talk a little bit about some of those limitations. And Lori, I hope you're on because you are the expert in that area.
Lori Miller, are you on the line with us?
I am on the line.
What can you add on the testing front?
Well, Phil is correct. The Abbott ID Now machines, they're good, but they should be used more as a screening tool. So we still will have to send out your swab, regardless of what our machine here would say, for confirmatory testing. And the reason is that this machine is only to be used as a screening. So if we test you and it says negative, it's not a guarantee that you're negative. You may have a very low level of the virus that this machine is not sensitive enough to pick up, that when we send it to the state or to Quest, we get a positive because they have much more sensitive equipment. The primary use for this is to help us find super acute positives and to help do maybe some contact tracing. If someone is positive from a commercial lab or from the state, we can do some quick screening on maybe their immediate family, things like that. This is not going to open up testing for everybody. You can't just come by and get swabbed and get an immediate negative. So I just want everyone to be aware that this is another tool that our physicians can use, and they will, I'm sure, use it in a judicious manner because the testing cartridges are also very hard to come by. So we can't test everybody that might want to get tested. The physicians will still follow recommendations and will still determine who gets tested where.
Is that rapid test the same kind of process, swabbing, as the other test samples are taken?
It is. It is the same. It's a nasopharyngeal swab. That is where research that has been done has proven is the best reservoir for the virus. So it's not a comfortable necessarily test, you know, collection, because we have to go pretty far back. This process will still be the same. If you're experiencing signs and symptoms of COVID, you need to call the hotline, 772-5788. You will speak to a nurse who will ask you some questions and will forward your information onto a physician who will call you and have a conversation with you that's more in depth. And then if needed, you'll be scheduled for our respiratory clinic.
Is that rapid test here in town yet?
The test is not here in town yet. Okay. We have not received it.
Expect it soon?
It is lost somewhere between FedEx and UPS. So, I mean, you know how that goes with shipping. So mm-hmm. We are tracking it and waiting on updates at this point in time.
Okay. Are you doing anything different with testing at the medical center in terms of process and how the samples are taken, where they're taken, or anything like that? Or
as far as COVID samples?
Mm-hmm.
The COVID samples are all collected down in the respiratory clinic, mm-hmm. which is down in the visiting physician's office. And for people who drive through or in the Quonset hut that's set up, they're collected down there. They will see a nurse, a physician if needed. The samples are collected and then brought up into the laboratory where we package them up and send them to the appropriate testing site. There is an algorithm given to us by the state to determine who should go to what type of laboratory.
Okay. And how about the turnaround time? Is that improving?
The turnaround time for the state is actually pretty good. I think Matt Powick, our resident IT genius, did some statistics and ran some, he calls it coding, and the turnaround time for the state result is about 2.8 days. So that's pretty good. Quest is working hard to get their backlog down. Right now their turnaround time is about, is a little more than 7.5 days, and their goal is to get it down to 3 to 4.
Okay. And what are the latest testing numbers?
The latest testing numbers, we have 69 tests that we have collected, 63 are negative, we have 1 recovered, and then 5 results are pending.
Okay. What else on the testing front do you want to highlight?
Nothing right now.
Okay.
We are, I spend a lot of my time doing research and, you know, trying to keep abreast of all the changes and everything that is happening with COVID. And if I see something that I think will work for us, I obviously will approach the medical staff and ask for their professional opinion as physicians. But right now, there's not a lot of things out there. Everybody, I'm sure, has heard about the serological testing. There's only one company so far that supposedly has a what's called an EUA from the FDA, which means emergency use, so we can use it without having to go through all of the channels in the FDA. However, when the company has been asked to produce that document, they cannot. And since we are a CLIA-certified laboratory and we want to make sure that any results we turn out are accurate, we cannot bring that test in-house until we actually know that it works.
Okay. You just threw a lot of acronyms at me, but...
Sorry.
That's all right.
That's my military background coming out.
Okay. Anyone else on the line from the medical center, Jennifer Briner or Liz Bacom, are you with us by phone here?
This is Jennifer. Can you hear me, Joe?
We got you. Go ahead.
Yeah. I don't have anything really new to say either. We're, you know, continuing to prepare and drill for taking care of people with COVID. I think it's important. We're hearing a lot on the national news about, you know, letting up and everything. And I think that in Alaska, we're seeing that flat curve. And so just an encouragement to keep doing what you're doing. You know, don't give up just because we're not seeing a lot of positive cases in Petersburg. That's a good thing. That means what we're doing is working. So continue the social distancing, wearing your mask, washing your hands, all those things. And we are going to continue to be ready to care for you if needed.
Yeah, there's a lot of that discussion about time frame and what it looks like when things open back up again, but we're still a long way from that. Phil or Jennifer, you want to tackle that?
Well, I think that's... Go ahead, Phil. I was just going to say that, you know, Alaska is lagging behind several weeks from the rest of the country, and so we would expect that our peak is going to be later and that it's going to continue. We're going to continue on doing this for some time.
And Phil, do you have anything to add?
I think it's hard to tell a little bit at this point. There's some modeling that the UAA has done that's actually pretty good. I think Aaron had brought that up at the previous Daily Show information on that related to Alaska. But certainly ideal scenario is we put a cap on it and we keep things tightened down as much as possible throughout this. But it's hard to tell on an actual timeline.
Okay, great. All right, anything else from the medical center before we switch over to the school district?
I do. I want to announce one thing. It's a positive thing. I've asked some staff to work on some wellness concepts for the community. And I do want to announce one thing. So our wonderful group is working on putting together something called a Healthy Community Series. And the first up is a virtual 5K, and it's for Beat the Odds and the Circle of Life. People can register online on the PMC website. If you sign up for the $20, you will receive a reflective buff, or you can just run for fun. You pick your own course, running or walking anytime during April 25th and May 2nd. Post a picture and your time on the Beat the Odds Facebook page or email them. And so Kelsey Lamb at pmc-health.org is helping facilitate that along with a few others. So we hope to keep that that message alive as far as some community wellness and series activities.
Great. 5K, about 3.1 miles. So, and the weather's getting nice here, so everyone can do that. All right, thanks. Let's move over to the school district, Erica Clute-Painter. And welcome, Erica. And what's the latest from you?
Hi, Joe. So we do have our first scheduled official virtual school board meeting tonight, and you'll be online with us and sharing it just like you always do with the community. So just a reminder to everybody out there that you'll still be able to hear the meeting just like you always do. And if you are out there in Radio Land and you are interested in participating in the meeting during the two areas where you can under items related and unrelated to the agenda, if you want to be on the agenda in some way to speak, you need to email either me or Miss Irene Littleton. And there's a passcode that you need to get into the meeting. So we do not want to be victims of Zoom bombing. If you haven't heard that yet, that is a new phrase in our life. So if you're interested in communicating or participating in the meeting during either one of those times, you just need to email us and we will get you the code and you can be a part of the meeting. But otherwise, it'll be on the radio just like it always is. Couple items of note, we are doing our spring budget revision tonight, so we'll have a presentation for that. The one good piece of news in there is that the state is allowing some flexibility in the ability to carry over the 10%. That's been the rule, and that's been one of the things we've been kind of pushing on for a while. So anything we do end up with at the end of the year, we're going to be able to carry that forward to next year. So we're excited about that, and we are going to be carrying forward a bit. So we'll get more details for that tonight. We are going to be awarding a pupil transportation bid. We had one bid. That's something we do every 5 years, and there's a bunch of requirements through the state for that, and Stikine Services has put in a bid for that, and they are on the agenda for the board to consider tonight for the next 5 years. We have some non-tenured contracts to award. We have 6 non-tenured contracts that we'll be giving out. We've had a couple of longtime, amazingly wonderful teachers who have submitted letters of resignation, which we're bummed about, but they are on the agenda for that tonight. So Mrs. Wallace, who's teaching middle school SPED, and Ms. Dahlberg, who's been a longtime sixth grade teacher in the district, is they're both moving on to different adventures. So we're wishing them well. We also want to talk a little bit tonight about the READS Act and preschool plans for next year as this whole situation continues. There may be some changes in what we're in our thinking and our planning for preschool and what the READS Act might look like in our district. Some unknowns. So, and then just some reorganization of board members tonight, with Mara Lutomsky resigning as the board president and bringing Meg Litster in to after our special meeting and just doing a little reorganization. And other than that, we're just moving forward with meals and technology and learning and some Spirit Week fun activities going on in the middle and high school and some great reading challenges. So just trying to stay connected, like Phil mentioned, focusing on that health and wellness and staying connected the best way we can with our kids and families. So,
Erica, I'm guessing there were a lot of unknowns for this budget revision with COVID-19, with students not being physically in school, the amount of meals you're now pushing out, the technology that's going out to kids. What's that budget look like now?
Well, it's interesting because it's been, so certain things that have actually really decreased in the budget, of course. I mean, clearly we don't need subs, right? I mean, so that budget line item has gone way down. And of course, the technology line item has gone up because we needed to adjust for the Chromebooks, for example, for third, fourth, and fifth grade. So some kind of shifting, things that we weren't planning for, of course, but then also some decreases you know, in areas of course activities, unfortunately, because those have been canceled. So, you know, that's a decrease. So, yeah, and our meals, my goodness, you know, I just got numbers from Carly, and these are, I mean, just amazing. So far, just in, this is our fourth week of working with meals, and we have distributed 4,676 breakfasts and 3,558 lunches, which is incredible. And also we're working on the weekend meals. So yes, so the cost there, definitely some increases in food service, but so well worth it with all the other stressors that are going on in families' lives. They don't need that on top of it. And I see lots of happy kids walking down to pick up their meals. I think it's a nice welcome break and something to look forward to for kids and parents as well.
Okay. Great. We'll hear more from you and the rest of the school board coming up later tonight. Anything else from the school district side of things?
Nope, I don't think so. Just enjoy a little bit of sunshine here this afternoon before the rain comes back. Get a little fresh air. So
okay.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Erica. Back to Carl Hagerman. This is probably more of a question for the borough manager at some point, but what is the COVID-19 situation done for the borough and its finances? Is it probably had some jumbling there as well, right?
Well, yeah, it's at this point, it's hard to see, you know, what the impact is. The assembly did transfer some money to emergency fund at the last meeting, $200,000 to account for expenses, which most of which will be reimbursed from the state, you know, after we submit our paperwork for a response. At this point, I think it's most of the disruption is just having some facilities closed and trying to find work for various people at the library and Parks and Rec. And I think that's the department heads have been successful at that. But yeah, we probably won't know the full impact of against our budget for quite some time. I know Steve is in the process of developing the budget for next year, next fiscal year, with Jody Tower, finance director, and is probably not having a very good time trying to sort out the impacts of the state's budget in that regard. But
you aren't seeing any federal money for emergency money yet from FEMA or anything?
Not yet. No.
Okay.
We're trying to maintain our paperwork so that we won't have any hiccups when it comes to reimbursement, but no payments yet.
Okay. All right, Phil Hofstetter, how about the hospital? I think you applied for loan money. What's the budget outlook looking like with the medical center and COVID-19?
Yep, staying. It's really trying to stay ahead of the impact. I mean, we are obviously where we need our staff to in preparation for this. So that's been the expense has been, steady and strong. And our revenue is obviously down because we are not seeing as many patients. So there's definitely a big issue there. We have had some payment options available. We were able to receive a payment. I can't recall the program, but it's a federal program of around $300,000 to help offset some of that. Our salaries and wages are basically we're spending $1 million a month. So we have significant amount that we have to offset. Our margins have always been tight. So it's a big concern of mine, obviously. But we received CMS had advanced payment program, and we're receiving that payment in the order of upwards of, I think, $1.8 or $2 million to help offset some costs. And, you know, it's, obviously healthcare finance is pretty complicated. We have something we submit called the cost report. So there's some true up on the Medicare side for the cost report. Budgetary wise, we're working really hard in the background with our controller and our financial consultant to develop a budget for this coming fiscal year. Overall, I think that as long as we stay ahead, as long as we tap into federal funding opportunities, I feel like that we're not in a situation that's necessarily catastrophic. However, we are monitoring it very, very closely.
Okay. All right. Well, anything else from the medical center standpoint before we sign off?
Nothing from me. Anything else that you want to hear from us?
Jennifer or Lori? Staffing okay?
No, I don't.
You have enough nurses there?
We have enough nurses here to take care of our regular patients. Clearly, if we had a huge surge in patients, that would be a stressor. But at this point, we have we are completely staffed without nurse travelers in the inpatient department right now, which is great. And so, yeah, our staffing is adequate for what we usually need. If we were to have a big surge, we would need to increase staffing through travelers or volunteers.
Okay. All right. Okay. And Carl, anything else from the borough standpoint?
No, I think we're good. We just want to encourage everybody to keep going, stay the course on social distancing. Wear a mask if you have one available. Wash your hands regularly. Don't touch your face. Cough in your elbow. Keep 6 feet away from others. This is how we're going to mitigate the spread of anything that enters the community, and everybody's doing good. Over the course of the weekend, I remember a phrase that came from the school, and I caught quite a few people doing good around town, really doing a good job with masking, social distancing, and it's great to see everybody just keep doing what you're doing, and we're going to be fine.
Okay, thank you very much. You're listening to KFSK in Petersburg. This is the daily update on COVID-19. We'll be back again tomorrow, same time, 12:30 in the afternoon, and take your calls again.